On Sunday, July 10th at 11 p.m., Sugar My Bowl presents percussionist, guitarist, vocalist, Mino Sinilu. Join us as we chat a little bit about his time with Miles Davis, Weather Report, his session work, and the recordings he's presented as a leader. That's Sunday, July 10th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is guitarist, percussionist, multi-instrumentalist, composer, Mino Sinilu. Yeah, I thought Mino would be a great guest, considering how I've been feeling this week in particular. Thought somebody who's uplifting and positive and buoyant would be a great person with whom I would chat, so stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl, starting now.
Things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. Sugar in my bowl.
My name is Joyce Jones, and I am sitting here outside in Brooklyn with
Mino Sinelu.
Mino Sinelu. See, I actually pronounce it correctly.
One of the rare ones. Even French people can pronounce this one right. Now, we're on the terrace fronting the Gowanus Canal, the part that is very clean. And, you know, it's a mix of urban life and wildlife.
Thank you, Mino, for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Sugar in My Bowl, yes. Just the title. It's been so long. Glad to be here. Thank you.
So, let's start at the beginning. You were born in Martinique?
No, I was born in France, actually. And my father is from Martinique. But I have much more on my background. You know, even on his side, there's a lot of Celtic blood from Brittany. And his mother also had native blood.
What does that mean, native?
Native, well, wrongly we call the Indians or the Caribbean Indians. We all know the story. It means that the people were truly born on that earth. I mean, there was migrations, but, you know, before, let's say, for lack of a better word, the importations of some of our ancestors, you know. And she also had Chinese blood, and his father was very short, very dark.
What's your mother's story?
She was born in Paris and also has Celtic blood from Brittany and a great-great-grandmother from Portugal. But the last name, Sinelu, they pronounce Sinelu in Romania. They swear it's Romanian, so I probably have gypsy blood, you know. So I don't know. Maybe I should do the test. But if that's true, then there's got to be some blood from India as well, you know.
Well, I'm glad everything came together and became you.
Thank you for that. I had no choice, but it took me a while to figure it out. But now I know that my my home is in my heart. So I guess I'm a citizen of this earth or this planet or this universe anyway.
So you have siblings?
I do. Two older brothers in France.
And you formed a band with them when you were younger?
Yes. Well, we started to exchange instruments and whatever we could put our hands on. You know, we shared a guitar for years. We had recorders, flutes, harmonica, whatever we could grab. And we're all polyinstrumentalists, but it seems that I had the better gift for the rhythms. You know, guitar was my first instrument, but I think I was less ridiculous than them on the drums. So that's just to serve the purpose that I play that instrument.
So did you study guitar?
No, I was peeping on the one of my brothers was lucky enough to get some private lessons, so I was peeping out, looking, you know, checking out the stuff. So I'm self-taught, you know. Even the few years I took in a conservatory were mostly to learn how to read music, not the instrument. We're not as fortunate as you guys are in the States. It's just, you know, the conservatory where I went, the first one, it's only one drum set there, you know. There was, I'm going to tell the truth, it's a story actually. They had one pair of bongos and I think one conga or something like that. And Ben, who saw me play the drums on several different artists, asked me if I was playing percussion. Of course, I say yes. 17 years old, on my own. I'm not necessarily proud of it, but not ashamed. I used to have to literally steal food to eat sometimes, you know. So harsh times, I know about that. Long story short, just, it was a total bluff, you know. So, because I never played percussion before that day. And I said, okay, we record in several months. So cool. So I stole the bongos from the conservatory. They were new, don't worry. Nobody played them. And I hitchhiked, in a sense, to the south of France. Took me 3 days and three nights. Good stories there, too. And then develop on my own a technique on the bongos, mostly with the index finger. Since I had a solid techniques with a stick, I just adapted that to the bongos. And then little by little, just and I recorded that album with them as a percussionist while playing the drums with other bands. Then little by little, they both combined, you know. I was lucky also because in Paris at that time, you had a lot of West African, not just West African, East African, also North African. You had people from Eastern Europe also. So we had a lot more of music genres than, let's say, even in New York. You know, you had great musicians, of course, always had in this wonderful city. And that's why I came as well. But as far as the variety of musical genres, Paris, London had quite an upper hand on New York. You could hear, you know, music from Egypt, from you know, many, many parts of Africa, Vietnam, from Indonesia. I mean, I saw some incredible groups. That's how I forged my style, so to speak, because there's all those sounds, those melodies, and those modes, you know. I learned meeting the real deal. I discovered that for some of the Indonesian music, it's conducted by the dance, which I could not figure out having the cassettes or just the vinyl, because you hear some abrupt changes of rhythms, of tempis, and that's the dancer conducting. I didn't realize that until I was able to see that. That's all of that in Paris.
We never actually talked about the group that you had with your brothers. What kind of group was that?
Obviously, since I have two siblings, it was a trio, you know. Well, it was a mixture of things, you know, Begin from Martinique, you know, like after that famous tune, Begin the Begin, that was in Martinique, they had the inspiration to do that. Things we liked. 10 years old, I bought my first album, The Hot Rats by Frank Zappa. I was listening to many kind of things. Listen to Led Zeppelin, to Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, Janis Joplin, Hendrix, of course, Maria Callas, and all the Copet, all the old Begins, and all the tangos, or the Afro-Cuban, Chiquita Serrano, Celia Cruz, all those things. So it was a mix of all of that, I would say.
Where did you play?
Well, wherever we could, so there was not much room to play at home. So
so where did you play out?
Well, there was centers, art centers, and just, you know, just basically bomb rush the places, and since we were pretty good.
And you just alternated what instrument you were going to play?
Yes, sometimes, like I often say, I don't mind embarrassing myself on many instruments. I don't care. Thank you. maybe I'll apologize sincerely after or not, but it's just I'm enjoying myself sincerely. I think it's a blessing that I received first and foremost when I listened to music, and I still do. And I wanted to share that the feelings that I felt listening to many kind of music. It was so overwhelming, so great. I can't quite find the words to describe. I said, oh, if I could only perpetuate that gift, I would be so happy. So in order to do so, it was hard work, you know, sometimes on a ping pong paddle, because I had no instruments, two rulers, you practice the sound, you know, even in my head, going to school, just trying to separate the two brains, so to speak, to gain synchronization and independence. Silly things like doing one circle one way, another one the other way, and I can still talk, I can do all of that, you know, which they like that when I do my workshops, when I start like that, I say, oh, it's already a state of mind, the story that you will say on your instrument, to be really generous if you really mean each note and each groove, you know, like I talked earlier during the rehearsal. I talked to one of the drummers and said, you know, you do the groove like you will die after, you know. Everybody laughed, but something will come that no books or no school will give you. It's you to be able to be that generous, that strong and that fragile at the same time. Maybe it's not that comfortable to bear your soul that deeply, but that's what I'm striving for. That's what it takes to be moved by any form of art or anything, you know. It takes extreme honesty and generosity from any human. And that human, we have a lot of messed up negative part just because we are human. But the positive is so, I'll take the bad and the ugly just because of what human can deliver at their best. And I still believe in that, even considering what's going on in the world, but it's not all of that. And there's a power, you know, and music has that power. And that's what it takes for me to show interest in, let's say, music. I like to feel the substance. You know, I like to redo the world and all those crazy dreams that we are allowed to have and we should never stop having.
How old were you when you were in that band with your brothers?
Well, I'm the youngest, so I guess, I don't know, I put my paws on the guitar the first time, perhaps at age 8, 7, or I saw some photos. But age 10, I was getting really serious. It was around age 15, I started to get paid gigs on the drums and sometimes on the guitar, so I was serious enough to do things like that, embarrass myself. No fear, no shame.
So you were playing set before you played percussion?
Oh, yeah. But before even I had a drum set, I was practicing, you know, on my limbs, you know, going to school, that was a rhythm, be aware of the surroundings. And the first time I sat behind a drum set, I knew how to play because I mentally prepared myself. You ever heard of Stefan Zweig, this novelist? He wrote a book called The Chess Player. And this is, I don't want to reveal, but one of the person in this book was a chess master, and he had just with his brain kept on repeating games, master games, while he was in concentration camps. And he escaped from that, and then he had to play. So I don't want to reveal the plot. But
that's what kept him alive.
Yeah, so sort of speak, I mean, it's with all humility, the comparison applies just because it was the same method. You know, the words we're talking now, I'm with you, I'll pay attention to your questions. But I'm totally, I develop a sixth sense, sort of speak, where like there is a rhythm of something over there that is fairly irregular. The rhythm and the melody of those birds, I'm totally aware of that. I could, let's say, an hour from now, perhaps transcribe this or come up with something. You know, I developed that sense of awareness. And that helps me a lot. And I don't know if the fact that I'm a Pisces, have a lot of intuition. I was able to join some groups like Weather Report with no rehearsal. So to go back to Paris, my siblings, and we put bands together, then I was in a show interest with jazz rock. And I was happy to see the first time that Headhunters played in Paris.
Herbie Hancock.
Yeah. And Chico Corea, the first time he played with his electric band. At the time, Bill Connors was on the guitar, you know, that was before Aldi Melola, with whom I recorded and played years after that. There was maybe 200 people in the place, and I could not believe it, because to me, that new music was the music, because it was the combination of people classically trained, who knew rock, who knew jazz. I say, how good can he get, you know? But I saw that, and I always tease Chick when I see him. I say, so you get your bag of tricks. He says, hey, you know, he shows me his percussion. He's a great drummer, actually. And all he had was a piano, a Moog, and a Fender Rhodes, and a snare drum. And he did a piece with Lenny White at the time, and trust me, you know, it could put some of us to shame, you know, drummers. So there was this. I lived in England for a while. I was in a group called Gong, which was a kind of, I don't know how to describe that, some kind of a rock experimental slash whatever, I don't know. But Alan Holdsworth was a guitarist in that band, you know. So Alan Holdsworth, for the people who don't know, this is, I mean, you just listen to what Frank Zappa used to say about him, and I rest my case, basically. So I was playing percussion with that band, but Alan put a band together. I was the drummer. Then Tony Williams called back Alan Holdsworth, and then he went back to the States. But just before that, actually, I came with Toto Bissent, a Haitian singer. I was playing both drums and percussion for her, sometimes singing background vocal and some guitar part. And she said, "You want to go to New York?" You know, I said, "Sure." And in February of 76, we go for one concert, and guess where it was? Carnegie Hall. So I could not speak English. That was my first trip to New York, to the United States. And I was at the Wellington Hotel, and it was winter. I was, the first cultural shock for me was to see so many brown people surviving the harsh winters. So, okay, it's possible. She was a very good friend with Ron Carter's wife, so out of nowhere, I'm in Ron Carter's apartment. He's serving me a drink, and he doesn't talk much. Since my English was very poor, I did not talk much. And we hung out at the Village Vanguard. It was with some Thad Jones Mel Lewis sitting at Ron Carter's table. Of course, everybody came. Tony Williams, Thad Jones, Mel Lewis, all the musicians came to say hi to him and to all of us, you know. So me saying hello, that's all I could say. Yes, don't understand, you know. But all of those experiences, I was sure I would come back to New York.
Papa loco, ou se vent, ou pou se nale, nou se papillon na beauté nouvelle bayagwe, et tout ça qui dit bien, j'aime la yé. Et tout ça qui dit mal, j'aime la yé. Papa loco, ou se vent, pou se nale. Se papillon na beauté nouvelle bayagwe. Papa loco, ou se vent, ou se nale. Se papillon na beauté nouvelle bayagwe. Beauté nouvelle bayagwe et tout ça qui dit bien. À couloir blanc et tout ça qui dit mal. Papa loco, où c'est vrai, où c'est allé, où c'est papillon, la beauté nouvelle bayagwe.
C'est
Because the vibe, it was it's tough, but it's also fair. You truly work hard. You can, I don't want to use the term succeed. I'm not a native speaker, so it's hard for me sometimes to find the right word that would express my thought. But I would say, you know, you're in a hotel. It's like it's very hot, you know. So, the of course, the heater doesn't work. You cannot turn it down. I call this, like, they go, rah, 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 rah. I said, don't understand, you know. And a charming guy come upstairs, and he does the same thing I did. The thing doesn't work. So he opens the window, so I show him that I'm cold. And I'm sure what he said is like, well, when you're cold, you close the window. And when you know, and I'll say, okay, I like this place. I will come back.
Now that you decided to come back to New York, what did you do musically to keep yourself here in New York?
Very, very, very tough. But I've known hardship a lot in my life. I learned how to share with others at a very young age. We used to have two rooms, not a two-bedroom. Five people living in that. The bathroom was separated, and all you had was a toilet and a sink. You know, you just go three or four times. You wash your face, you rinse it, your trunk, and you know, it's a three-part operation. And I was fine. So as you know my mind by now, I just you know, put one leg on the top of the thing, that work on my stretch as I do whatever I have to do. And everything as a kid, everything is a game anyway. So, and I have no merit to be like that, but I'm just, I think, very, very, very positive. Any situation, there is something positive, something to be learned about it. So that's the way I live my life and the way I observe what's surrounding me, you know, and who's surrounding me. So the level of what I can appreciate is, I can't measure it. So that's why perhaps I'm always that kid spirit that I always displayed. But, you know, the seriousness in what I do, but the way I do it, but doesn't mean I take myself more seriously than that.
So how did you get work?
Well, I jammed. At that time, New York was New York. In other words, you could walk around the streets and then suddenly, oh, that's Jerry Mulligan playing there. Hello, can I jam? Jerry says, yes, I jam. Then there's another place, I go there. And I used to live in Newark. There were all the jazz clubs. I was playing mostly drums there, five sets a night, $35, you know. Who was there? Sarah Vaughan, Dexter Gordon, Woody Shaw. So, yeah, okay, come next week. Okay, I'm playing with Woody Shaw and Jimmy McGriff, Jimmy Ponder, and all the cats over there. So, little by little, people knew that there was in town a crazy brown French Martinican slash whatever player who had a different style, yet knew new jazz and other music. So the word spread out, and I just, by chance, arrived at the First Baptist Church of Nutley.
New Jersey.
Yeah. And I met Lawrence Roberts. I didn't know who he was, and he was just the pastor to me of that church. A hell of a singer. I found out later, a composer, producer, pianist as well. The pianist at the time was playing there, played with Whitney Houston at the beginning of her career. So, of course, Sissy Houston used to come. When the Blind Boys of Alabama came to sing, when Jesse Jackson ran from president, he came, and I discovered he had a voice. He sang with a choir. He had about three choirs, and one of them was conducted by Stephanie Minetti, who conducted the Jubilation, who had a Grammy in 2010, which I invited in 2011 to do a special project with a part of the choir. And, you know, I went to say hello to the preacher, Lawrence Roberts, who was the founder of Savoy Records. So he was the first producer of, James Cleveland. Everybody in the gospel world know him. He was actually the top speaker for his eulogy. So I'm like in the middle of that looking, I'm the lightest creature in the church, you know. I'm fine with that. But I didn't know you had to dress to go to church. So I have boots, jeans inside the boots, a leather jacket with an afro.
Well, they say come as you are.
Well, then that was me. So I met them and say, I said, do you need a drummer right away? You know, he asked me, how did I find work? So I used to ask people, you know, I was very, I don't know if it's bold, I just was myself and just simple, you know, I knew I could play. So, okay, what do you need? I can deliver. And either they trusted me or not. And most of the time, thankfully, people did. So they say, ah, too bad you don't play bass. I say, I play bass. I say, come Thursday for the rehearsal. Exactly. I don't know if you hear, but Joss is laughing now. I call Walter Booker, whom I met with Sarah Vaughan, because we recorded, the recording studio at the time, 8 tracks, whatever, but it's still, I did some productions there at the time. And so I thought, I noticed electric bass in your place. I said, yeah, sure. I said, can I borrow it? I said, sure, come pick it up, you know. So I did, came, went back to Jersey, opened the box, it was a fretless. Never played fretless in my life. I said, oh my God. So long story short, I bought a $60 amp and show up at the rehearsal. And suddenly I get one of the greatest music lessons in my life, which happened many times in many music genres. And I'm discovering that because I didn't know the hymns. And, you know, the choirs get happy and they stay on passing chords. And I'm like, which key are they playing, you know? And nothing was in G, D, or E, or A, like the guitar tuning. Everything was B flat, A flat, and of course me wanted to challenge myself. All I had to do is tune the bass a half tone lower. But of course, no, I will suffer, make it, and sweat, and blood, and tears. And they were very patient with me. But I did learn gospel music this way, which perhaps was the best way, because I was checking out the left hand of the pianist. It was a great experience, and I'll never forget. So all the time, I tried to put myself in those situations, you know. I met Louisiana Red and Sugar Blue. So that's most of the blues that I learned were with those artists. Perhaps was the youngest big band drummer in France at the time. Ballet d'Afrique Noire, which were mostly from Guinea at the time, were rehearsing near Saint-Michel in Paris. So they used to invite me often. So I had my first djembe over there. On the weekend, you had all the, now you call this gypsy jazz in America, Burry Lila Green, and all his cousins were playing for free. You know, you just buy a beer and some French fries and stay 4 hours getting your music listened. You know? So if they let me jam, I did, you know, and the flamenco guys came and no shame, no fear, just come as you are, like you said. I did and will do over and over again and will always, always learn. You know, the day I stop learning, that's 6 feet under, I'm going to be bored as a
bored person.
Yeah, but it's like there was a lot of opportunities, but I did make those opportunities happen. So they saw me play the drums, then there's a band, I was playing, there was soul music, and 2 weeks before we played at Mikael's, asked them, I said, can you get a drummer? And they said, oh my God, you want to quit the band? I said, no, I just want to play percussion, you know. Can you find a drummer? I said, can you play percussion? I said, yes. And they trusted me. So I'm playing percussion in this band that I was playing drums before for, I don't know, 2 years. And we had Mikael's, and there's a gentleman who's really staring at me, really weird. And, you know, we're close to Harlem, so he gave me the fist. I give him the fist, brother, whatever. I don't know what's going on, but it was odd, but I must admit, this person was listening to the music like no one else in that club were. So, of course, we stopped the show, and everybody on stage tried to impress that very person, whom I knew. I still didn't know who he was. And I'm leaving the stage really pissed off because I hate that. You know, we do the show, let's play 3 hours, 6 hours, but when it's finished, practice at home, please. You know, I don't like that, you know. If you want to tune up, do it discreetly. And the first thing that the audience, I don't care if it's a club or whatever, the first thing they should hear is the count off or something, and the concentration and everybody come in together. That I'm general about that, you know. To me, that elevate the music. So I'm passing this guy, grabs my elbow quite strongly, so at that time, how can I put it? Let's just say that that was not a good idea. But I sensed intensity, but not really aggressivity.
Like
a fine threshold, okay. You know, because his eyes were very intense. It was about less than a foot apart from my own face. And, you know, the comfort zone was gone by miles. And I just questioned the situation for those 2 or 3 seconds, you know. And, well, I can say that on the radio, but let's just say that he appreciated my playing.
Yeah.
Those were not his words at all. But give me your number. You're bad, you know what. And I said, okay, my name is Mino. How are you? And removing his hand from my elbow. We have that vibe. And then little by little, there's a circle around us until the point where Pat Michaels came and said, Mino, do you know who that is? I said, no, I introduced myself, and we're facing each other still. You know, he's looking at me like in disbelief now that I know him. So this is Miles Davis. So of course, I felt like putting my own foot in my own mouth. I said, okay, I did it again. And he say, something, something that, which you can imagine. Give me your number. I said, okay, I get my card. So my business cards at the time were like pieces of cardboard, handwritten with a pen and with scotch tape on the top of it to make them shiny, you know, and protect the ink.
Very creative.
So much for the classy French situation. And I went downstairs knowing that I blew once again my chance to whatever, and I was, interestingly enough, I was fine with it because I know myself and I accept myself with my silliness and whatever you want to call it. I was downstairs changing, getting paid, so it took a good 20 minutes. And I went upstairs because I told myself, say, you say you will come back upstairs, so you go back, even though I knew he was not going to be there anymore. And I went upstairs, he was waiting for me on the top of the stairs. I gave him my card, and he said the same thing that he said earlier, and he said he will call me. But I'm saying all of that to say that there's many stories about Miles, and this one also is true. I made and played and recorded and toured with many, many prestigious people, artists, but among themselves, very few, if any others, would have done that. First and foremost, I don't recognize him. Second of all, I make him wait 20 minutes, you know? So, I rest my case. Say what you want about Miles, and everybody had their own stories. Many make up their own stories, and it's okay, it's them and themselves. But this one is true, and I ask everyone to remember that, because that shows a lot about the human quality of this artist.
And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl is the name of this program. Our guest for this evening is Mino Sinilu. And what we're listening to right now in the background is You and I, Miles Davis from Star People. That's a 1983 Columbia Records release. Miles Davis on trumpet, Mino Sinilu on percussion, Al Foster on drums, Marcus Miller on bass, Bill Evans on soprano, tenor, sax on others, Mike Stern on guitar. Before this, we heard What It Is, Miles Davis from Decoy. That's a 1984 Columbia Records release. Miles Davis trumpet, synthesizer, Mino Sinilu on percussion, Bill Evans, soprano saxophone, Al Foster drums, Daryl Jones on bass, and John Scofield on guitar. Before that, we heard Papa Loco from Toto Bisant. It features Marie Claude Benoit and Marianne Mathias. The name of the release is Chante Haiti. This is a 1977 Arian Records release. Bob Guerin on bass, Patrice Sinilu on guitar, Aconio Dolo and Mino Sinilu on percussion. Before that, we heard Night Vision from the group Gong. The name of their recording is Night Illusion. Gadzooz! It's a 1976 Virgin Records release. This band was fronted by Pierre Morlin, and it features Alan Holdsworth on guitar, Mino Sinilu on percussion. There's actually a laundry list of percussion and other instruments for all of the band members. Before that, we heard Moon Dance. This was a solo feature on the Kenny Barron and Mino Sinilu Swamp Sally recording. It's a 1996 Verve Records release. And Mino is on percussion and everything else. And before that, we heard Oncoming Horizons from Mino Sinilu's debut as a leader. The name of the release is titled Mino Sinilu. That's a 1999 Blue Thumb Records release. Richard Buona on electric bass and acoustic guitar, backing vocals as well. Mitch Stein on electric and acoustic guitar. Mino Sinilu on guitar, flute, and everything else. Before that, we heard our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, the very best of Nina Simone, 1967-1972. This is originally recorded in 1967 on RCA BMG. This is from a 1998 compilation. Stay tuned for our associate producer Hank Williams and our On the Bandstand segment, where you'll find out more about Mino Sinilu's event on Friday, July 15th. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl continues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for July 10th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. This week's show features percussionist Mino Sinilu. You can catch him at Superfine Bar in Dumbo on July 15th, and at the Newark Museum's Jazz in the Garden series on the 28th. And we have lots more music for you this week. Aza, the exhibit of drummer Will Calhoun's visual art collaboration, is on display at the Casita Maria Center for Arts and Education in the South Bronx until the 21st, and we have a review of that up in our blog. Saxophonist Billy Harper leads a quintet at Smoke from the 15th through the 17th. Saxophonist Sweet Papa Lou Donaldson is at the Blue Note on the 18th. Harpist Brandy Younger has weekly Sunday brunch sets at Minton's in Harlem and a free outdoor performance at the Prospect Park Bandshell as part of the Celebrate Brooklyn Festival on the 21st. Looking further ahead, pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio at Smoke from the 22nd to 24th. Vocalist Catherine Russell and bassist Christian McBride are at the Carrimore Jazz Festival in Westchester County on the 23rd. Bassist and vocalist Mimi Jones is at Minton's in Harlem on the 23rd. Blues vocalist Alexis P. Suter is at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York on the 24th for a brunch set. Bassist William Parker and drummer Hamid Drake are at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club with the Cosmic Mountain Quintet and In Order to Survive on the 26th and 27th. Pianist Barry Harris leads a trio at the Village Vanguard from the 26th through the 31st. Finally, vocalist Diane Reeves is in Queensbridge Park on the 27th for a free outdoor performance as part of the Summer Stage Series. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news, and Suga is spelled S-U-G-A. If you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. If you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off with our bi-weekly schedule. We're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday, July 24th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
This is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
course, now you have to tell us what the call was like.
The call came, and they say, come immediately to the studio.
Oh, no, wait a minute. No, you have to use the voice.
Oh, everybody does that.
Oh, no, I saw you do this during the street naming ceremony, so I know you can do this.
I thought Joyce Jones was a friend. Let me caution you about this person over here. Anyway, so it's...
you're bad, blah, 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 blah. Come immediately to the studio, I'll pay the taxi. Clack,
hanging up. I used to live in Jersey at the time. Not a rich man. I'm not taking a taxi to Manhattan, not even knowing the address, by the way. I had at the time a big station wagon. I used to get the whole band together when I had Andy Bay in a band, all those cats. We used to have fun with all of that. But long story short, afterwards, Bill Evans called me. And by now, you know how often I can embarrass myself. So, hello, this is Bill Evans. So I go on to, I say, okay, make it good, you know. I really appreciate your work. No, I play saxophone, so I can't get this thing right, no matter what. So, I might as well remind myself. I said, he called me, but he didn't give me the addresses. That's why I'm calling you. So, this is the famous address, West End 77th Street. And, okay, so, of course, I took my car, didn't take the taxi. And since Miles Day come to the studio, I just came, you know, bare as I could be. Came in, enter, make me visit the whole place, or whatever. Mike Stern was there. Another Japanese photographer, I forget his name, I'm sorry, but he has a photo of this session, actually. Bill was there. So we go upstairs, he's on, oh, this is the screen, this is that, this is my shoes, whatever. I'm like wondering when the hell on earth we will play music, because me, younger, I would cut to the chase in a minute, you know, and he sends that. I say, okay, where is your equipment? I come help you. Where is the taxi? I say, well, I didn't bring anything. So, once again, I cannot exactly quote him. He say, what, I don't know. My daughter was just born. I don't know. I just was myself, and I'm confident that it was cool because, I don't know, I can't explain, really. I just... You know, whatever it said did not affect me the least because, you know, it says it's a studio. So to me, in a studio, there is instruments, you know. It's a studio. Is there instruments here? And I saw a bass drum, a cymbal, and I put the cymbal on the stand and two sticks. And I look at him and say, I'm ready. And that was 1980, I believe. And I still have that cymbal and that bass drum that he gave to me. Probably somebody else's instruments, but hey. Miles gave them to me. What are you going to do about it? So we start to play, and suddenly they go into swing. I say, my goodness, you can swing. You can do reggae, all of that. And he started to call Al Foster. He called Marcus. Gil Evans came too. And they start to jam. Say, Miles, you remember when we were kids? Oh, yeah. And they start to do Jean-Pierre. And then he say, Marcus, play that. Oh, okay, oh, and I will start to groove like that, you know. We'll be right back. And he called Al and said, you gotta meet this guy. He can play drums, percussion. And Al was a fantastic drummer and artist. Was not in favor of having once again the experience he had with On the Corner with two drummers.
Mm-hmm.
So aware of that, I actually refused Miles' offer to play the drums also in his band. Yes, which is I'm saying that just to say it's funny when people come to me and say, because I have my own style, no doubt. On like it or not, I have developed my own voice for many years, and I'm not afraid. I can hold a big band with a head shaker, and I can just play just this hi-hat. It's not because I have tom-toms and all kind of things that I will use them. I'm not afraid of that, you know. This is me. But when quite a known bass player says, I love the way you play drums, because you play drums like a percussionist. And I don't feel like telling my whole life story. Well, guess what? I play the drums for far longer than I play percussion. Was an accident. It would have been interesting if I'd say yes and play the drums also along with percussion with Miles Davis. What the perception of some people on my playing with that instrument would have been.
I noticed when I listened to the recordings with you and Miles, what actually came to mind was when Al Foster played with M2ME, who was also a Sugar guest at one point. And M2ME had mentioned how when he was playing, that the percussionist got to add the colors. Did you feel that you could add more colors than playing drum?
Well, it's like by the fact that I'm a drummer as well, I will adapt. Let's say many drummers. I remember we talked to Lenny White also when we played together, and his wife came to me and said, "My God, you think you're the best in the world? He loves you, all of that." I said, "Wow, tremendous respect for him." He said, "Usually he doesn't like too much some of the your peers." I said, "Well, I'll tell you something that is not a secret. Since I play the same instrument, I know what I don't want to hear when I'm." Sitting behind the drums from a percussionist, so it's very easy for me to adapt. Al is a swinging machine. He's got a heart big as a Godzilla, and yet he's very loose with the tempo, you know, and the way he's playing is very loose. So you just adapt to that. There's no right and wrong. When I got the call for Weather Report, for example, I was shocked because when I saw Omar playing, I said, "Well, they don't need a percussionist with him, you know."
Or her king drummers.
Yeah. So then I rebuilt entirely my setup for that band, and I do that over and over again. And when I got the call for Kate Bush about a year and a half ago, when we did the residency, when she came back after 35 years of absence, Omar was on the drums, and he said, I suggested they call you because I knew you would come up with some other stuff. He told me something, a wonderful compliment. He knows my playing, my God, for so many years. He said, "You know, I knew you would deliver, but what you brought was beyond what I could imagine." I had a setup even bigger than his, you know, because at some point we had to match the feel of 15 Celtic drummers. Just the two of us had to deliver that, so therefore I had to add the drums techniques and the snare technique and so on and so forth. So sometimes it could be minimalistic, but I also will lock somehow with the drummers. I make it sound like it's one by not playing, by playing with, by knowing, learning the style of that person, knowing where and how this person will do their feels, their drum feels, and all of this create an ensemble that makes sense in whatever music we play. As a sideman or from the rhythm section, your role is to help someone shine. I take pride to do it very well, like very few actually, and I'm totally fine with that. Doesn't mean I cannot tear apart a triangle and do a solo on it, or be a tiger and animal and out of control beast on the solo.
Now, you mentioned Weather Report earlier. Was that the first opportunity since Miles that you were actually pretty much featured as a guitarist as well?
Well, it was simple what I played on that album. But actually, the bass, I played the bass on, and the drums on that tune, Confiance, even if I was not credited, that's a very simple tune. The first time to get an international exposure as a vocalist, a composer, singer, and...
guitarist?
Yes, no doubt. And when the group from a Haitian group from Florida, Magnum Band did a version of Confiance, which was the first tune they used as one of my compositions on the two Weather Report album I did. Yes, that was the first time for sure, you know. It was.
Thank you. pleurer qu'on sort. Pas, pas moi, pas désolé, dis ça. T'es dit moi, faut des fois patience. Moi paraît, pas moi en chance. Yo dis-moi, musique pas bon putain. Où fait que fait rien. Moi toujours prié, bon Dieu bon pour. Va laisser tomber, Pino. J'espère que son parle seul. Tant pour famille, moi quitter. Fais jumer la vie, moi presser. Désolé, dis ça. T'es dit moins faute, moins passe. Moins paré, pour moi ma
Like all throughout the Caribbean, when they speak Creole, French Creole, they understand the lyrics, and they sing that in weddings, and the lyrics are pretty. I remember some of the critics, the jazz critics. I want to mention some of the reviews at the time, Downbeat, among others, thinking I was singing a patois from Capo Verde or whatever. They didn't know it was, well, it was a mix. It's not correct Creole per se, but it's, I use idioms from Martinique, Guadeloupe, and Haiti. I used on that. They sing that in the wedding, and the lyrics are like, basically, follow your dreams. I just say that my folks told me to have patience, but give me a chance, and I know I will do it. I just need to play music, which was my... Everybody's got their conflict in their own family, and I had to leave my own family to pursue music. music. So yes, even with all the jokes and all the fun that will never cease to be part of my life, no matter what. Yet, still food to survive often, and did whatever I had to do to deliver that message that resonates so deep within my very being, you know, that music healed me, music saved my life many times, and to be a messenger, it's a really, really honor position that I take extremely seriously. Joe wanted me to do that tune among another one in a last album that he did. Yeah, but no doubt that was a first time featured on an international platform as all of the above. Including guitarist, since you insist.
Yes. No, because, I mean, you started as a guitarist. That was your first, well, one of the instruments that you approached. And pretty much people talk about you as a percussionist, but you're a guitarist.
Like I often say, I embarrass myself on many instruments. I say it's funny because often I get a chance to give interviews to specialized media, let's say drums, percussion, and all I talk about is guitar, and I get bored to death. And I love drums, percussion as well, but my first love and will remain guitar. And often some guitarists ask me about the latest gizmo for acoustic guitar. Do you do? What kind of mic do you use? You know, because I appreciate my sound, or they know I get great instruments. Because also, often I could not practice the drums, so that instrument is very portable and suit my soul often. I have a special affinity with guitar.
Do you get to play guitar these days, other than on your own recordings?
Well, so many great guitarists first play guitar. Am I a guitarist? I don't know, but I can do things that I got my own style. I can do certain things that, you know, for sure in a singer-songwriter world, I can. No, not often, but, you know, some recordings, people say, oh, do you have any ideas? Do it, you know, I mean, like to the point where it's almost ridiculous. Like, I remember doing an album with Vicente Amigo, La Ciudad de las Ideas. He won a Grammy for that. He wanted me to play the drums on that, which I did, and I did some percussion, and he asked me, anything you want to do, you know, you want to play some guitar and some bass? For those who don't know him, Paco de Lucia left us, was the greatest by a long shot, and everybody recognized that.
Guitarist.
Yeah, flamenco maestro. Vicente Amigo is one of the greatest. He was then, even when Paco was alive, but certainly is. And him asking me to play guitar flamenco, hello.
So you mentioned Weather Report, and you talked about the time when you were with them, but you were still with Miles at the time, right?
That's interesting. You know that because it's like I did pull it off. For a while, I was with both bands. To the point where I said, Miles, is that okay if I leave? And he was totally cool with it, you know. So I was with Weather Report. But that was the end of the band. I said, thanks a lot, guys. I managed to do several world tours with them and to the two last albums. Then, I don't know if that was before or after, when Herbie Hancock called me to do the Headhunters 2 for a while. But then Miles called me out of the blue, and he knew where I was. He says, where are you, Frenchie? And he called me in my hotel room, so he certainly knew where I was. And we never talked more than 5 minutes on the phone, Miles and I, for many reasons. Because of my accent, because of his way of talking on the phone. It was hard to understand him, and my accent is strong. He had trouble understanding me as well. We talk. I used to call him when I knew he was in the hospital. Give me one set of keys. One night, I said, what is this? The key to my Ferrari. I said, great. I said, I give it back to him. He said, don't you want to take a spin? I said, well, in New York, no, but in the Autobahn in Germany, perhaps. Long story short, he called me back for the 222 tour, which I did. And interestingly enough, I grew a very strong friendship with Daryl Jones, who was the third bass player I met during my first run with Miles. And he left the band to go with Sting. When I rejoined the band with 2-2, I asked Miles, I said, who is on the bass? Because I didn't know about his new bands, and I don't know, maybe a little bit of cockiness on my part, I don't know. Yes, I know. He said, Daryl. And I knew with Daryl I couldn't hold any band together because it's so solid. And I said, okay, count me in. I could see through the phone his smile because he knew me so well. So I joined again. Daryl was there, and of course, a fantastic reunion. I toured for a while, and then I got the call for Sting. Miles, once again, was cool, and I joked about it with Don Elias and Herbie once. I said, I guess I'm the only one who quit the band 2 times. We laughed about that.
But, well, the funny thing is that, from what I've heard, Miles is generally taking artists from other bands to join his band, and we're taking you from his band.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yes, I must admit, I feel blessed, because even now I'm starting to realizing all the positive messages that I tried to convey to Miss Mino. Put your own thing out, do this. Really, it was much more than I could realize at the time, because I didn't care. I just said, I'm with him. Came once in his house. I said, what do you have there? I said, I had a bass and a soprano. I said, what are you going to do with those? I said, I'm going to sell them. Why? I said, because I need some money. I said, you want money? He was ready to give me some money. And me and my medieval self, I said, no, pay me when we work. I guess he was looking out for us far more than I could imagine and perceive at the time. And still now, I remember some details, a phrase or a wink of his eye or that he did a really, really positive reinforcement. But even those words seem lame compared to what I received from him. So I feel pretty blessed.
Joe Zawinul understood that he wasn't exactly the most generous person emotionally.
Well, he's the one who asked me to bring those tunes. So also with him, I think his first surprise at Mikhail's, again, very important club, actually. That's too bad for the people who never knew that club, but really did tremendous work for the music. I mean, he used to go to Mikhail's at the time.
That was Sheila Anderson's, the Queen of Hang's favorite spot as well.
Yeah, we spoke about that on that interview.
She was a former Sugar guest.
Joe Zawinul, we start to talk on the bus too, you know. He realized that I was aware and exposed to music from not only his country, but all the Balkans and Eastern, all those countries. I knew about those music. I was shocked because I was the first of a musician in New York that he met that knew about those things. It could go from the deepest conversation about those music to the drink that at the time the country was called Czechoslovakia. And I tried the Slivovitz. I'm not just saying that to talk about alcohol, but it's just a cultural thing.
Well, this is apparently his favorite drink, according to Christian McBride.
The fact that I knew about that drink shocked him. And of course, he said his father made the best one. And of course, at contrario, explained to him that didn't come just from his country, but other countries, and we went back and forth until he let me try that beverage, and I conquered. I was one of the best I had had at the time. This will create bond. I think it's important. So people who don't drink, everybody have their own way to bond, you know. By the fact that I knew about this cultural beverage and the music and all of the above, created a certain bond with Joe, knowing that some of what was playing, I could hear it because I knew about that. So when they say it's not that generous, I respectfully disagree with that statement. Joe was pretty generous to allow and ask me to bring compositions to a band which is really pretty strong as far as writing music, I would say.
actually, that was the thing that I did notice. I was rather surprised to see that your compositions were included. So. And they just brought you on board.
But the story about Mikhail and bringing me on board and all of that, I didn't know that I was doing one of my bands there. And Victor Bailey and Omar Hakim were the rhythm section of the band at the time. I was playing with one of my bands, you know, that I put together. And I didn't know. They told me maybe several years after when they heard the show, there was the coin operated phone, pay phone, and they were putting coins after coins after coins, calling California, said, Joe, you gotta hire this guy, Joe, you gotta, I didn't know that, you know, and I said, you know, nice to meet you, to see you again, we talk, you know, I knew them, and when Joe called me to join Weather Report, so they were the one, so once again, the generosity, I would say Joe was generous with me, and I had a good voyage with, of course, Wayne, not just in the band, but also I played a little bit, it was Alfonso Johnson, and my sister, Terilyn Carrington, and Mitch Foreman in the band, and we toured for a few weeks with Wayne as well.
Working with vocalists. I think your Carnegie Hall job was with a vocalist, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What is that like for you? Does that mean anything differently, working with vocalists?
Yes, it does, because I'm a vocalist as well. Once again, like when we spoke about drummer, I kind of know the do's and don'ts, you know. Vocalists have to deliver a message not only with the sound of their voice, but also with the lyrics. So it's another dimension to what you do. Even though you might not understand the lyrics when you work with people who speak another language, and I always ask the translation when it's the case. Human voice touches other humans like very few other instruments may. When you work with singers, vocalists, or even poets now in theater, it's something else to reckon with, and I welcome that. So it's different. It's very different.
You mentioned earlier Andy Bay, and you also work with Cassandra Wilson, and they're pretty precise in their deliveries.
Yeah, well, with all due respect, I don't think we can compare Andy Bay with many people. I remember going somewhere for a project in the airport, and Joe Williams called and said,
Oh, Andy Bay. The voice.
With a big smile. That says it all, you know. My goodness, I got him to sing background vocals, Creole, my crazy bands at the time.
Oh, wow.
And then he called me in some of his trios, and I used to take the train, the bus, to the train, to the subway, literally, to listen to him in Harlem. And, we used to be very tight, and he is and will always have a special place in my heart, both as a human and an artist.
O que era sonho vir eterna? Quem vai ser o primeiro a me responder? Saí dessa cidade e a vida onde ela é. Subi novas montanhas e amantes procura no fim da estrada da poeira. Rio com seus frutos me alimenta. Essa coisa que nada mais vê. O que você faria pra sair desse amor? O que é o seu vida pena? Ainda se o segundo a me responder. Bebe minha chileza em uma ilha com minha mulher. Tinha todas as roupas esperando o sol nascer. Esperando as formas da pureza.
Has been busy as a mis querer intriga.
Don't know him, please go see him. That's something to reckon with. Yes, Mimi, you know, when are we doing something together? 2 years ago, I saw him. I will make good to my promise.
When I see him these days, he's usually him and his piano.
Well, he can do that very
exactly.
Well. That's
he does
for
it
sure,
extremely
you know,
well.
For sure. I remember Jerry Allen picking his bread. Jerry Allen.
On American Song.
Yeah. She was in my band for several years, too, and I recorded some of her albums. And now we are working on a duet project. Yeah. I'm a little bit devilish, you know. Say, come on, Jerry, you gotta sing. No, me, no, she's got to sing.
She sang before. She sang back up
you with,
with Mary Wilson.
She's just singing Creole in the band, you know. It's like, I like that. I like to push the envelope because it's great to do things when people are not used to do. Like, I have that crazy dream for many years is to have musicians known for what they play doing something else. In other words, having, like they say, Jeff Watts singing. Mm-hmm. Have Brent Von Marsalis on percussion.
Ah.
Have Kenny Garrett playing the piano.
Yeah, Christian McBride singing. He doesn't sing.
But you see the concept,
yeah.
You know, I thought it would be fabulous by the fact that those persons have such a level of craftsmanship in their own instrument. How bad could it be? Because they had to challenge themselves and they cannot hide, and I include myself in that bunch. We all have some of the, you know, when we play the instrument, this thing we know we can do in our seat. Well, guess what? You can do that when it's not your instrument.
Right.
Can you imagine the level of sincerity that would emanate from such music? When I did the duet that I produced with Kenny Barron, I got him to play contrabass, you know?
Oh.
Thank you.
listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl's the name of this program. Our guest for this evening is Mino Sinilu. And what we're listening to right now is Swamp Sally, the title cut from Kenny Barron and Mino Sinilu. This is a 1996 Verve Records release. Kenny Barron on piano, acoustic bass, and synthesizer. And Mino Sinilu is on percussion and everything else, which is generally the description here. Percussion and everything else. Before that, we heard Andy Bay, Saidas e Bandeiras. That's Milton Nascimento's composition from Tuesdays in Chinatown. This is a 2001 12th Street Records release. Andy Bay, lead vocals and piano. Paul Myers on guitar. Carl Gardner on flugelhorn. Marty Ehrlich on alto flute, Steve Turay on trombone, Peter Washington on bass, Mino Sinilu on percussion, and the horns were arranged by Jerry Allen. That's right, pianist Jerry Allen. And before that, we heard Jungle Stuff from Weather Report. This is the name of that release. That's a 1986 Columbia Records release. And before that, we heard Confiance from Weather Report. That's a Columbia Records 1989 Sportin' Life release. Mino Sinilu is lead vocals, guitar, and bass on this one. Omar Hakim and Victor Bailey are backing vocals, and they're also Victor Bailey's on bass and Omar Hakim's on drums. Wayne Shorter on soprano sax and Joe Zavinul on synthesizer. Before that, we heard Jean-Pierre from Miles Davis and his release, We Want Miles, a 1982 Columbia Records release. Miles Davis on trumpet, Marcus Miller on bass, Bill Evans on soprano saxophone, Mike Stern on guitar, Al Foster on drums, and Mino Sinilu on percussion. Before that, we heard our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. She'll Get My Bowl continues.
Synthesizer for the first time in his life
when they're
recording. I tried to push him to sing because few people know he used to be a doo-wop singer.
No.
Yes. So spread the word and come on, help me with the pressure. You know? So I like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to the projects that come from your prodding people.
Yeah, yeah. The, you know, and don't you steal my idea out there.
You have a gig coming up.
Yes.
This coming.
Yeah. July 15th, I'm going to be at Superfine in Dembo, starting a series. So this time is going to be past, present, and future. What I mean by that is some of the tunes I haven't played for more than 25 years will perform. Some are part of an unreleased album that is being recorded. Some are work in progress, so it's going to be that vibe. The next one probably is going to be more string-oriented. It's going to be more from my work that I did as a film score composer.
Yes, I actually wanted to ask you about that after you tell me about this gig.
Yeah, so this one, I will have a fabulous band with Jesse Fisher on keyboard, David Cutler on the bass, Daniel Sedarnik, who is a great percussion here on percussion, and he's going to sing too.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
We got Harvey Worth on the drums, who slowly but surely make sure he will not sing, but you know, we have two more rehearsals, and let's see what happens. And I have two fabulous singers, Keith Anthony Fluitt, who played with everybody. I mean, my goodness, Nona Hendricks, Harry Belafonte. I mean, name it, he's done it. And we're going to do a version of Deo, a Banana Boat song, for many reasons I'll explain later. And Nadia Washington, who is a tremendous vocalist, composer, and a wonderful human being. I'm discovering her voice. I think I'm probably going to do a duet project with her, because I really, really... I feel her as a human and as a artist as well. So we'll see.
The Banana Boat song?
First time I went to Martinique was 1963. And I saw those guys carrying the banana bunches and giving them away because the boat was going back to Europe, so the fruit would never make it. So for a symbolic few cents, you could get a full bunch. And they were heavy. And it was impressive to me. And people took me on the field. I discovered it is a flower first. All of this. And they said, be careful because there is some snakes in this. You got to tap the taught me how to mine those bunches. So I said, wow, this resonates quite a bit, this song, the lyrics, what it means. I see those images as a kid, you know, for the first time discovering Guadeloupe and Martinique, part of my roots when I went there at age 7. So that represents all of that to me. So yes, I will do that song. Keith, who sang with Harry Belafonte, is going to do it justice, I'm sure, you know.
Are you recording?
Oh my God, it's an ongoing project. I have about 23 songs recorded and I still cannot stop myself. But well, it happens often when I think I finish a project, then I realize there's something missing. For example, my first album, I realized there was no drum solo on it. So in about 4 hours, I just start to jam with a loop. Interestingly enough, that tune was taken for several commercials.
Which one is that?
It's called Why Not? And I did it just with one microphone and the phone ringing next to me. So I had only time to do one take because I was taking a plane that day to go back to Europe. So whenever you hear myself screaming, it's not because I'm so overjoyed with my plane, it's because I'm trying to cover the sound of the phone ringing.
So how did you wind up calling it Why Not?
Oh, Why Not? No. It's so improbable that why not?
I was actually wondering about that process of when you're recording percussions. Is it generally like layers of recordings, or how does that generally work?
If I'm by myself, it's going to be like that, you know, which I did like that. But, you know, I welcome also a bunch of mics and let's go for it, commit to it. And but it could be tough on your own unless you have an engineer or a studio. That's pretty tough. But it could be anything. I like to use several mic techniques, you know, to give the sound of the room, to give depth to those things. I get really anal about it sometimes. I like to first and foremost use the mics, because they're basically ears on steroids. It's very organic, and I learned by observing, asking questions, you know, for many years. I made several master recorders, you know, even in a classical world. In France, I remember this guy, Gilbert Prenon, two mics, he recorded a 90-piece orchestra, and it's all mixed. Then other people have other techniques, so you learn.
Do you use pedals?
I do, do pedals. I like to mix electronics and acoustic. To me, those tools are available, why not using them? Because you can achieve things with the electronics you cannot do with the acoustic. And vice versa. The best of both worlds have been there, so let's enjoy them.
Did you always feel that way?
No, especially with electronic percussion and drums. I thought it was pretty vulgar, to be honest. But it's how you use things, you know. People say, I don't like this instrument. Well, depends who's playing it and how they play it, you know. So I think it's like everything else, like also any music. Most music can be great if they're well played and well delivered. You know, people say, I don't like jazz. Well, you listen to Kind of Blue, have you listened to Satchmo?
You have this other career, film scores. When we first met, you gave me a collection and you gave me a stick to drum. So
say you're a drummer, give you a stick. You
thank
know.
You.
Say you're a baker.
As part of the collection, you have songs from, what is it, Le Cale?
La Californie, yes. It's the latest full feature that I scored. I did 4 full features. There was also one called Farange with Tim Roth, actually, in the late 80s. First film by Raoul Peck called Haitian Corner, I did also the score for that. And I did also called Plongée for him as well. La Californie is the one where I was nominated at Cannes as one of the 10 best film composers. They call me, say, okay, you are nominated, Mr. Sinelier. I said, great, thank you. Did I win? They say, we can't tell you. I said, well, please tell me, because I got 2 weeks tour, one solo concert in Brazil. If that's the case, I might cut my tour short. I said, well, I'm sorry, I voted for you. Don't worry, sweetheart. And also, one of my tunes was taken for 6 years, a world campaign for Hugo Boss, the Boss Bottle with Gabriel Audi, with the tune called Quest on my album Quest Journey. And a lot of documentaries and a few TV spots as well. I got a good experience in visual art, so to speak.
Well, I also noticed that, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw that you were also involved in the film score for Dead Man Walking?
Yes, they were gracious enough, because often when you are just hired as a musician, often you give your ideas and give more ideas, and that's after a point where is the threshold in your co-producing, co-writing, and not everybody is gracious enough to mention it. So that's what happened on Tim Robbins' films, and they did mention my participation. So yes, I didn't write the score, but I was more involved than just playing, and they mentioned it, so I'm very grateful for that. So I want to give a shout out to Al Santana, with whom I wrote my first visual composition. It's, well, Big Box, it was called. I think it's a 15-minute black and white film. And his latest project, which was Salty Dog Blues, a great documentary 3 years ago.
Tell us that information about where you're going to be and when and the time and all that on the 15th.
So on the 15th, I will be at Superfine in Dumbo. And that's the first of a series we will do. It will be different every time. And also July 28th, we'll be at the Newark Museum with a trio. It's the reunion with Mayra Casales, vocal and percussion, and Madeleine Yayo Dele Nelson, percussion and vocals. And last time we played, it was in the mid-80s in Germany. I took that trio. That's a reunion. But July 15th is like close to Bastille Day. So they have noticed on one of the flyers, they say dressed in blue, white and red. Do not worry about this, please. That was not my idea. Just come and enjoy. Fabulous band, you know, Jesse Fisher, keyboard, David Cutler on the bass, Harvey Worth on the drums, Daniel Sedonik on percussion, fantastic singers, Keith Anthony Fluitt. And we're going to do a Banana Boat song. Nadia Washington, which is the first time for me to work with her. Incredible talent. And everybody's a good egg, so this is a must. When people approach me, say, you want to play with this musician? I say, are they good human first? And then after, we'll see if they're talented. It's all subjective anyway. But I need positive vibes. And I pride myself to surround myself with positive people. So it's gonna be a joyful thing. What can I say? We're going to have fun.
Well, thank you so much, Minu Senelu. Is there anything else you want to share with the WBAI listening audience before we sign off?
Thank you for coming, good in the time, and I'm glad you say you came prepared, but actually this interview took another turn when you lost your notes, and it's good, it's all jazz, you know. WBAI, well, just keep tuned, because it's quality, is quality, and just support and really listen to radio, because it's definitely something we need in this world of everything is all down for us. But you know, WBAI is the symbol of quality in my book.
Thank you so much.
Touch to be invited.
And you're listening to the closing moments of Sugar My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening was Minu Senelu, guitarist, percussionist, multi-instrumentalist, composer, pretty cool dude who knows really nice places in Brooklyn. As you could hear, our exchange was recorded in the great outdoors. We actually tried a couple of different locations. What we're listening to right now is Why Not, from Minu Senelu's debut as a leader. The name of the release is titled Minu Senelu. It's a 1999 Blue Thumb Records release. And once again, Minu Senelu will be at Superfine in Dumbo on Friday, July 15th. It's 126 Front Street in Brooklyn. And the doors open at 8 p.m. and the live music starts at 9 p.m. Make your way over to check him out. He's definitely worth seeing. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa coming up next. And we'll be back on the 24th of July. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.